the J-Talk Podcast.
Yosh.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell, Sam Robson and Johnny Nicol with you. And Sam, another fascinating J1 match day. Do we have to send out some warning signs for some big clubs? Because, yes, it wasn't the best weekend for some of them.
No, it was a dreadful weekend for a lot of them, really. And I think if any weekend show that this season is so open that anyone can win it, I think this is it. Because, yeah, a lot of the big teams and a lot of the favoured teams stumbled quite badly. And, yeah, who knows who can win on any given day in this league.
Yeah, it's crazy. In inverted commas, Johnny, a few upsets over the weekend. But, yes, as if those become more commonplace as the season progresses, then, yeah, maybe some of these unfancy teams will be definitely threatening at the sharp end of the table.
Yeah, I think we got used to it that couple of years Kawasaki dominated of teams winning the league with like so many points. But then last year it was down to about 2 points per game. And I think that this year could be one of these years you see someone wins it with like 65 or even less points. There's so many teams in such a short space. It's going to be a fascinating battle at either end of the league this year, I think.
Yes, indeed. All right. So, well, Johnny's here to help us review all of the games from the weekend's J1 match day 4. But of course, he comes to us with a leaning towards Gunma Osaka. So that is where we'll start our review of match day 4 at the Panasonic Stadium. And Johnny, you were coming off a midweek win in the Levain Cup, Gunma's first victory of the season away at Kyoto. So I guess, yeah, optimism was high on the terraces at the Panasonic Stadium. You were there on Sunday. And, well, yeah, the first bit of business that we have to chat about is, I guess, Masaaki Higashiguchi must have had a stormer on Wednesday night, because the Gunma boss, Danny Poyatos, made a total of 5 changes to his 11 from the last league game, including Higashiguchi for the first time under his stewardship in the league. It was an interesting decision, and we obviously spoke a lot about it in the preseason. Sam's in favour of starting Kosei Tani and sticking with him. What did you think of the decision to go back to Higashiguchi in just the fourth round of the season?
It's interesting, because when Gunma put out their team announcement, I just got so used to Higashiguchi being the first choice that I was just going to skip past it, because it's usually the attacking places where the changes would be. And I'd look through the lineup, and then someone told me, Higashiguchi's back in goal. And I mean, it's one of these things, you know, like when it happens in a World Cup, I think it was like Robert Green for England in 2010, he made a mistake in the first game, and it's, well, do you change the keeper for the second game? But then what happens if that keeper makes a mistake? I'm not really sure Poyatos' logic for this. He chose Tani. Tani didn't set the world on fire, but he also didn't really do anything wrong. Kind of skipping ahead a little bit, Higashiguchi was far more out of his goal than Tani was, playing the ball about a lot. I assume that was the reasoning behind why Poyatos did what he did. But, you know, you talked last week with Alan about the Gunma Kobe game, and I think you rightly questioned why Poyatos had made so many changes. And it was interesting on the Gunma website, they actually directly asked him, like, why did you take Dawan out and put Yamamoto in? Which I thought was quite a very direct question for the club website to ask the coach. And he didn't give a particularly convincing answer, if you ask me. And I haven't heard exactly why he brought Higashiguchi back. Gunma against Kyoto, you say they got the first win, but Gunma were quite a full strength side out, whereas Kyoto had some like high school kids, I think the guy from university, a couple of first year pros, so they were very much expected to win that game. And you know, the opponents are Hiroshima. I know both these teams came in with only 2 points from the first 3 games, but I mean, I certainly wasn't fooled, and I doubt Gunma were fooled that Hiroshima have fallen off. I've seen a few of their games, and I think they let themselves down a bit with their finishing against Niigata, and I think they're a bit unlucky. Well, they're very unlucky with the refereeing against Sapporo, and you know, going away to Marinos, the defending champions, and outplaying them last week. I honestly thought Hiroshima would win. I thought it'd be a tight game, but I thought Hiroshima were a strong team before the game. I still think they are. But you know, I'm getting used to the Poyatos way of football, which is definitely much better to watch than has been in recent years.
Right. Okay. So yeah, we'll try and move on, Sam. But I mean, it's definitely an eye-opening decision, isn't it? To go back to Higashiguchi. Well, for Poyatos, just to move to Higashiguchi. Obviously, he hasn't managed either Higashiguchi or Tani before this season. But yeah, I don't know, what kind of message does this send? Do you think it was a horses for courses decision? And is it good to be flip-flopping goalkeepers, especially this early into the season?
I really don't think so. I think you have to make a choice on that and then settle and give that goalkeeper confidence, because Tani now has had three games. I don't think he's been especially great, but not done anything wrong, as Johnny said. And he's had one game has gone against him, that 4-0, and he's been dropped immediately. And that sets the precedent. Like, Higashiguchi obviously makes a mistake at the end of this game. Does that mean he's out for the next one and they're going to keep swapping and there's no continuity? Because that back line, it's not like the most experienced back line if you take Miura out of it and Kwan has missed the last few. So they need something settled in behind them. So I think that if it's going to be constant chop and changing, I don't think that helps anyone. And yeah, maybe Poyatos can't legislate necessarily for the mistake that Higashiguchi makes. And maybe if he doesn't make that, no, we're not sat here talking about it. But yeah, I didn't like the decision, the presumed decision when we were speaking about it last week. And yeah, it looks an even worse one now. So yeah, I think they need some consistency, whichever way that is. And I thought it was a brave decision, a good decision to go with Tani to start with. But yeah, I'm not going to be on board for any flip-flopping of goalkeepers.
Yeah, all right then. So there was little that Higashiguchi could do about Hiroshima taking the lead after just 75 seconds. A lofted ball in from the left by Shunki Higashi was brought down and swept across the box by Tsukasa Morishima. Higashiguchi did deflect it slightly with an outstretched leg, but Nassim Ben Khalifa smashed in first time to give Hiroshima a very, very early lead. So, Johnny, straight onto the back foot, but yeah, how did you feel Gamba responded to that setback? There was a chance for Musashi Suzuki about 10 minutes before the break with the injured Issam Jabali not in the match day squad, of course. And there was Hiroshima thinking they'd gone 2-0 up just before the end of the first half when a Mitsuta free kick was headed on and headed in at the back post by Takumu Kawamura, only for the flag to go up for offside. I'm not sure if Gamba had a lucky escape there or not, but yeah, how did you feel the rest of the first half went with Gamba a goal behind?
Well, considering we conceded goals right at the start of both halves against Vissel Kobe, and Sagan Tosu actually came very close to scoring right at the start of both halves in the previous game and didn't, I think there was a kind of case of, oh no, here we go again, especially like, you know, the way the Kobe game went out and that knowing the quality of Hiroshima to go a goal down within like 90 seconds against them, it was, yeah. There's a kind of stunned silence around the stadium, and to slightly go off on a bit of a tangent, but I've noticed that Nassim Ben Khalifa, I think, according to my records, four of his six J1 goals have come against Gamba. So I don't know if he's in some sort of competition with Lukian to see who can get the most, like, the highest percentage of goals against what one team. I thought Gamba were, you know, the first 10 minutes that they were shocked, they didn't really react at all, but. This might be a first for the pod, but I'm going to say some negative comments about Makoto Mitsuta. And in fairness to him, he didn't select himself at right wing back, and he certainly didn't leave himself there until the damage was almost irreparable. But I mean, I've never played wing back in my life, but I have sat roughly where I've sat in Panasonic Stadium many times, and I know where a wing back should be. And there was no one anywhere close to that position in the field multiple times for Hiroshima. And it just gave Gamba and Fukuda the out ball down the left. And he was just constantly running it to Tsukasa Shiotani, who, fortunately for Hiroshima, he is a very fine defender. And then Notsuda was having to come across to cover. But Gamba were just able to build up ahead of steam. They always had that out ball down the left. And it was actually interesting. You mentioned that big chance for Suzuki actually came one of the few times he went down the right, a pre-planned move. Alano came in from his wing. Dawan won the header, then Alano crossed it in, and Suzuki's finish, it's one of these from the stadium, it takes a second or two to work out it hasn't actually gone in, because it looked like the trajectory looked like it should go in, but the net's not bulging, no one's cheering. It was I think that would have given Gamba so much confidence, because they just carved Hiroshima apart from like one end of the field to the other. And I think, although it didn't go in, I suppose it did give them some confidence that we could stand toe-to-toe with Hiroshima. We'd given them an early chance, and you know, that was my first time in the stadium since chanting was back, and it made a real difference, because, you know, mentioning someone like Mitsuda, the atmosphere of this season to what he got used to in his first year as a pro is completely different. I mean, even people like, you know, like Araki or Shiotani, Sasaki, players like that, they've played most of their career in that kind of atmosphere, but they've very much got used to something different. So, you know, it's always funny when you're behind how quickly the clock goes. And it seemed to just zip past with Gamba coming more and more into it. And then obviously you mentioned the Kawamura, the offside goal. That was kind of interesting again in the stadium because it just looked offside. And then basically the body language from all the players told me no one seriously thought it was a goal. But still we're kind of hanging around for about 3 minutes or so. The players are having a drink and having a chat in the centre circle and no one really knew what was going on. But I think 2-0 at halftime would definitely have flattered Hiroshima, who did threatening the break, but I thought Gamba grew into the half after the early shock. How about Sam? How did you see the first half kind of playing out?
Yeah, after that initial 10 minutes or so where I thought Gamba were really up against it after the quick start from Hiroshima, I think they settled in nicely. I think, take out the Kobe game, I think Gamba have generally been able to control games pretty well. I think that midfield three, when it is played, is of Darwin, Lavi and Usami, is really good. It wins most of those battles. I really like Usami in this new role that he's playing in. And hopefully, I know he got a bit of a knock towards the end of the game. Hopefully, that's not serious for Gamba. But yeah, he kind of runs it. I thought Gamba looked really good, missed a couple of chances. And they probably deserve to be going in level at half time. But yeah, this free kick, it's an interesting one, the goal that's ruled out. As poor Kawamura, I think he's just destined not to do anything this season because everything goes against him, because he's onside and the ball does flick off Miura rather than a Hiroshima player. So I can see why they think it's should be given, but I think there's two players that are offside for Hiroshima. One of them is Sotiriu, who's quite close to Miura, and because the flag is given on the field, I don't think there's any clear evidence to say that Sotiriu is not interfering with Miura. So I think that's why it's not overruled. I think that's probably the correct decision. And yeah, it would have flattered Hiroshima if they did go 2-0 up at halftime. Because yeah, as you mentioned, Mitsuta there, it's just that they've got so many the players that they want to put into this system. And if you want to play the two strikers in Sotiriu and Ben Khalifa, then also have Morishima, Mitsuta and Kawamura in there, there's not really enough space and one of them has to get shunted. And it's poor Mitsuta who, yeah, I don't think he started at left wing back when he first played for Hiroshima. But yeah, you can tell he's not played there in a wing back position ever since, because it was the same against Marinos last week. He was never really in any sort of defensive position. He always wants to be back where he's natural. And yeah, it was one that Gamba really took advantage of in there. And it took a little while before it was rectified. And it was the same against Marinos. But when it did, I think Mr. getting back into his position really helped. But yeah, I thought Gamba played pretty well and have done, generally speaking, this season. That's why it was so weird last week when he made so many changes, because I didn't think anything had gone particularly wrong that he needs to make those changes. And it's just going to be interesting to see how he reacts to this one as well, because yeah, it's another defeat now. Gamba only got 2 points this season. Yeah, he just needs to, I think, stick to his guns, because I think Gamba generally are playing pretty well, and it's just not quite got the finishing touches, and it could have easily been applied by Suzuki here and then a lot in the second half.
Indeed. All right. So, yeah, the chances after the break were definitely, the majority of them were in Gamba's attacking end. And they did equalise with 20 minutes left when Takashi Usami was found down the left by Yuya Fukuda. A lovely ball with the outside of his right foot. Gamba's main man skipping inside Hayato Araki with his shot deflecting off Taishi Matsumoto and flashing past Keisuke Osako and into the net. And then, with their chance to really put a stamp on this game, Johnny, you would have wished for better from Musashi Suzuki on a couple of occasions inside the last 10 minutes. Or there was one straight after the equaliser, wasn't there? But yeah, he did have a number of chances as the game went on, as Gamba went in search of their first win of the season.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that Usami goal, again, we talked about the Mitsuta hole. He was still at right wing back there. There was acres of space down there, and they eventually did plug it with Nakano, which kind of stopped Gamba just kind of rampantly going down there. But yeah, Suzuki, he should have been confident. He had a goal and assist from his first two games. I know he had a couple of injury issues in pre-season, but he seemed to be on his game. I think he generally competed quite well up there, just his finishing. I think we're going to talk about kind of national team stuff later. Osako really did his claims no harm at all with a kind of string of pretty decent stops, not just from Suzuki, but he just felt the way Osako was standing up and Suzuki was through it, it just looked like Osako was going to come off the better of the two. But I mean, yeah, again, at that point, the atmosphere in the stadium was great. The attendance was actually quite poor. It was down on the previous week. But, you know, once Gamba got that goal, and then there's the one just after Gamba had scored, Alano gets the ball off Sho Sasaki and then crosses it in, and it's just too far ahead of Suzuki and he puts it wide. Just the roar of the fans. I think that the roof would have come off Panasonic Stadium if they'd gone and scored that. And, you know, the ascendancy was very much with Gamba at that point. But then, you know, once they didn't get the goals, that I think, you know, I listened to the FC Tokyo Kai guys. They did that really interesting interview with Albert Pudge in pre-season. And it was great how they got him talking about Japanese football in general. And he talked about the mentality of the players. And I know the people at home probably laughing when I talk about Poyatos talking about a winning mentality, given he's known for draws. But that's something he said since he's come into the club, like, and not to put words in his mouth, this is more my opinion, but Gamba have got used to mediocrity. They've accepted it over the last few years, and Poyatos really wants to change that. And Usami, the captain, made similar comments after the Tosu game, like they had their foot on Tosu's throat, and they didn't finish them off, and they have to be more ruthless. And you just felt like Hiroshima were stronger mentally. I think you mentioned with the Japan Croatia World Cup game. Hiroshima knew they had something in the tank to throw at Gamba later on, whereas you sort of felt like Gamba, once they didn't take those chances from Suzuki, they just got deeper and deeper and deeper. And, you know, fans like myself were kind of left sort of fearing the worst, which ultimately did come.
It did indeed. Yes, there was a sickening, totally avoidable twist in the tail for Gamba at the death when the ball was played back to Higashiguchi in the 92nd minute. He had several options available and picked the worst possible one. A straight ball out to Netta Lavi, who was closed down immediately by Morishima. The ball breaking to Ben Khalifa, who collided with Lavi as he looked to shift it back onto his left foot. The referee pointing to the spot with Makoto Mitsuta smashing in the penalty in the 94th minute. So, Sam, this was obviously for Johnny and all the Gamba supporters, a really, really tough one to take. And you're right with what you said earlier on when we were talking about the goalkeepers. Does this mistake now cost Higashiguchi his spot in the team?
No idea. At the moment, I don't know. I don't think it should on this particular mistake, because he's doing what the manager wants him to do. And you have to accept when you play out from the back in this way, and especially a goalkeeper that's not necessarily used to playing in that way, that these sorts of mistakes happen. And we saw it just about first season with Ange Postecoglou at Marinos. It's so many times this happens, but you keep going with it and eventually you get your reward. So based on one mistake, I think it would again be foolish to make a change, even though the change shouldn't have been made in the first place. But yeah, let's get away from that. But yeah, it's just, I think the combination of a team that is so good at high pressing and putting pressure on, combined with a goalkeeper and maybe a team that's still getting used to the way playing out from the back, it just led to this mistake. Because yes, there are obvious places he could go. I think he could have fired it out to the left fullback. He could have gone longer if he wanted to. And I think teams that want to play out from the back, they have to realise, the goalkeeper has to realise that yes, that's the ideal solution. But when your option there is surrounded by two or three players and he's going to be in a real mess on the edge of his own area, that's the time you don't play that. You have to go long occasionally. And the best goalkeepers in these systems do that. So, yeah, he made the mistake. It's a poor pass to Lavi. There's not a lot he can do about it. Once Ben Khalifa then cuts back inside, it's just, I think he just kind of stumbles into him. I think he makes contact. He doesn't complain about the penalty. I think it's a clear one. Plenty of online and Twitter have thought that this wasn't a penalty because there was some contact with Ben Khalifa's studs and Lavi, but Ben Khalifa is just cutting inside. He's not there making a tackle. The only contact comes because Lavi is rushing in trying to atone for his goalkeeper's error. So I think it was a stonewall penalty and the correct decision awarded. But yeah, just a real horrible mistake and one of many similar mistakes across this weekend.
Indeed. Now, obviously, you would have been sick to your stomach inside the stadium watching this unfold, Johnny. But in the cold light of day, when you were able to check out a replay, were you I mean, you're not happy with the decision, obviously, because you wish the collision never happened. But do you feel that the penalty decision was ultimately correct?
Yeah, I think there's no complaints from anyone in the stadium, no complaints from any Gamba fans. And I'll be honest, if I wasn't on here tonight, I wouldn't have watched the highlights. But I did, and I didn't. I only watched it one time. I didn't see any kind of controversy about it. It's, you know, as Sam said, it's just unfortunate that pass. You know, I think if I was Poyatos, I'd be standing with a sign saying "kick the ball here." It's like, hey, Ishikawa last year, just need the ball. 92nd minute, just whack it downfield. What 1-1's is as good as we're likely to get after, you know, Usami going off injured. It's a sickener. There was a kind of, it's almost, you know, Gamba. It's just, I get the feeling Gamba, like Sam said, they've played well. They feel almost like they're a top half team with just a horrible, horrible tendency to self-destruct at the crucial moment. It feels like if they're not 2-0 up going into additional time at home, they will not win the game. You're just kind of waiting for something to go wrong. Like, I was kind of thinking about this on the way home, because I'm sure Sam Freche go home by the bullet train. I think if you went round and asked the Sam Freche players, how strong do you think Gamba are? I'm pretty sure a lot of them would say they're nowhere near the worst team in the league, but unfortunately they haven't, despite some decent showings, maybe from like, you know, three games and a half that they've played quite well. They've only got 2 points to show for it. Next week we've got Sapporo, a team we traditionally struggle against style-wise, coming to Panasonic Stadium. You know, they really need to get their skates on and get a win, but by hook or by crook.
Indeed. So, yeah, at this early stage of the season, we do like to feature teams winning for the first time towards the front of the queue of games that we have to review. And, yeah, coming into this game, both Gamba and Hiroshima were still in search of their first victory. Now Hiroshima have theirs. So, yes, Gamba will be looking to break their duck this coming weekend against Sapporo, as Johnny's mentioned, and we hope they can do it. So, yes, Sapporo, speaking of them, they are next cab off the rank because, like Hiroshima, they also won for the first time on the weekend. They hosted one of the big fish in J1, Yokohama F. Marinos, on Sunday up at the Dome. And, Sam, this was definitely one of the most eye-catching results of the weekend. Sapporo winning 2-0 over the defending champions. And not only an eye-opening result, but an eye-opening performance from Sapporo, as they looked terrific to me on the highlights. And, yes, in stark contrast, the champions looked well below their best. And I think that's a massive understatement.
Yeah, I think I got lucky last week when I picked this as my kind of by default as the game to watch for the weekend, because, yeah, just it was just incredible the way that Sapporo completely controlled this game. They were fantastic from the first minute. Yeah, there were a few mistakes from Marinos at the back, but Sapporo just controlled the game. They had so many chances. It even got to a stage where I thought they're 1-0. They haven't killed this game off. They're going to be punished for this, surely. But no, they kept going. They kept control. I mean, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but defensively they were solid. They never looked like coming under too much pressure. And yeah, it was just Marinos just could not get going. And I think a lot of that has to go to credit Sapporo. I thought they were so up and at them. I thought their midfield completely controlled it. I think Kobayashi came in for his first league start. I thought he was excellent in midfield. He won so many balls. He caused so many turnovers in there. And Arano back in his midfield position, he did likewise. And I just thought, yeah, they were really, really good. And Marinos, just nothing went well for them. They just couldn't get any sort of combinations going. They couldn't get the ball upfield very quickly at all. It was just, yeah, a really poor performance from Marinos. They haven't been, I don't think, great all season, but they've always found a 20 or 30 minute period where they dominate the game and then they win it in that period. They didn't have anything like that in this game. Sapporo, yeah, completely in control. Ogashiwa as well. I think him coming up front, I think, really adds something to them, because they were toothless in those first two games without him. But since then, yeah, 4 goals in 2 games for the team. He's playing really well. So, yeah, it was just an excellent performance from Sapporo, and it's allayed the early fears that they might be ones getting dragged into a relegation battle, because on this evidence, there's no chance.
Yeah, fantastic performance reward all the punters up at the Sapporo Dome for fronting up a terrific victory for Consadole, Johnny. So, yes, their goals were, well, the first one was terrific, and the second one came as a result, direct result of sloppy play at the back. And, yes, this on-loan goalkeeper, Jun Ichimori, who you know an awful lot about, well, yes, he did not have a great day at the office, did he? He zipped out of to the edge of his box for no apparent reason when a ball was played out from the back by Gunsung Jung in the 8th minute, and that allowed Takuro Kaneko to skip past him and whip in a cross that Tsuyoshi Ogashiwa volleyed in tremendously with his left foot, with the ball coming across him in the 8th minute. A lovely goal, and I guess that set the scene for the rest of the afternoon. F. Marinos appeared to be shell-shocked from that point. As Sam said, they were miles from their best, and yes, this was a terrific performance from Sapporo.
Yeah, I wonder if Jun Ichimori and Masaki Higashiguchi called each other on Sunday night and had a drowned their sorrows together about what went wrong. I mean, Ichimori, he is, I've seen him from his time at Gamba and his time at Okayama, is a very good goalkeeper. But, you know, as we said in the previous game, it takes a bit of time to play that Marinos system. And, you know, if you're playing for a team that is defending champions, it's won the league twice in the last 4 years, you don't necessarily have an awful lot of time. So I don't know if Sam's greatest fear of Hiroki Ikura getting back in the side might be realised sooner rather than later. I mean, I only caught the highlights of this, but just kind of looking at the highlights and also the kind of stats, I was surprised. Like, Marinos only having 6 shots, and actually looked very un-Marinos for them. The stats I've been using on Sportoria, 3 of the 4 games this season, they've actually had fewer than 10 shots in the whole game. So I'm kind of wondering what's going on there a little bit. You know, as Sam said, the results have been there, but, you know, last year they were famed for their rotation and keeping everyone fresh and everyone on their toes. This year it's very much been all apart from injuries or suspensions, it's been the same players over and over again. And, you know, they did the Van Cup game at home to J2 Jubilo Iwata in midweek, and I think out of everyone in J1, they played almost the strongest lineup compared to the other teams, which is a bit surprising. So I think they've had a tough week, because that game against Jubilo, they only won 1-0 at home with courtesy of an own goal. And, yeah, they were second best to Hiroshima despite getting that 1-1. So I think this 2-0, it's almost been coming in a way. So I guess, I mean, from their fans' perspective, that, you know, no one likes to lose a game, but they might hope it's a bit of a wake-up call about the direction of the team. Is Muscat, is he decided on these 10 or 11 players that these are going to form the core of the team? What happens if Anderson Lopez gets injured? There's a couple of positions like that we don't really have proper answers, like who's going to come in. So, you know, it's a result that provokes more questions than answers, but it'll be interesting to see, you know, what comes of it.
Yes, indeed. So, definitely some questions for Kevin Muscat. But, I mean, yeah, he'll hope a defeat like this is a bit of a wake-up call, I guess, for his squad. And he'll look to get them back on track starting this coming weekend. But, yeah, as Sam said earlier, yeah, we were just waiting for a response from the champions after they went behind, as I said, inside the first 10 minutes. But, yes, the best chances in the remainder of the first half went the way of the hosts, with Yuya Asano missing the target one-on-one with Ichimori with 6 minutes left until half-time. Then in stoppage time, Ichimori, who we know is an excellent shot stopper, did make a huge save to deny Ogashiwa his second of the afternoon. It was slightly better from F. Marinos after the break. Anderson Lopez heading an elbow cross straight at Gu, and Yuta Koike, Yuta, don't call me Ryuta, curling a free kick wide. But the killer second for Sapporo came with 13 minutes left. And yeah, Johnny, maybe it was Higashiguchi and Ichimori with a bit of a Zoom nomikai on Sunday night, because yes, Higashiguchi's had his travails at the end of the game against Hiroshima. And then yes, Marcos Jr., well, I don't know necessarily whether he sold Ichimori up the river or not, but he definitely didn't fizz his back pass back to the keeper with as much venom as the keeper would have liked. Yuki Kobayashi was on him in a flash, and Ichimori's attempted clearance bounced basically straight off Kobayashi's shin and allowed him to stroll in and roll into an unguarded net. And despite Jan Mateus heading across against the post with 3 minutes left, F. Marinos were unable to score, and the Sapporo Dome faithful, yes, could definitely celebrate a terrific afternoon at the office for their team. And yes, a first victory of the season. So well done to Consadole, and also celebrating the third team from this past weekend to win for the first time this year are Cerezo Osaka. They won 2-1 at home over Tosu, and it was prodigal son Shinji Kagawa who stole their headlines. He was making his first league start of the season, and after he went close in the 21st minute, dragging a shot wide after he was slipped in by Riku Matsuda, 7 minutes before the break, the moment the Yodoko Sakura Stadium faithful had waited for, Mutsuki Kato crossed from the right and from alongside the penalty spot, despite slipping as he shaped to strike the ball, Kagawa volleyed home for his first Cerezo League goal since May 2010. So what a moment for him, Sam. And unfortunately for us, it meant that Satoki Wajo was sent to the bench with Kagawa starting. But the Cerezo supporters celebrated with gusto. And well, they might. The prodigal son is back on the score sheet.
Yeah, very good for him. A fantastic moment. Yeah, I thought he played pretty well in the three games he played off the bench. Then he got his start in the Levain Cup, and then that played him into the squad here. Because I was a little worried about Kagawa coming back, because since he left Dortmund for the second time, his career has kind of gone nowhere. He played in Greece last time, he was in Belgium. I've spoken to everyone who's seen him since his Dortmund days, and they've just said, yeah, he's a shell of his former self. He's not playing very well. So I was thinking, oh no, what? He's just going to let himself down maybe in the J. But I think he's played pretty well. This is a well-taken goal, just off balance, and yeah, deserved it. I thought Cerezo, again, with a better side, they deserve their victory. They hadn't really started this season too well, but they got a few players back in midweek. I'm thinking Riku Matsuda was back at right back. I think that really helps as well. It allowed Mike Kuma back up to the right wing position that he played so well in last week. They then also gave Mutsuki Kato time up front. He came in again for Leo Sierra, who hadn't really caught fire in the first few games. I think all the changes worked well. It was a bit more of a familiarity about the side, I think, for Cerezo, for the team that did so well last season. And yeah, they really caused a lot of problems for Tosu. Yes, again, this goal comes as a result of a mistake, Harada passing infield straight to Maikuma, and then Kato does really well to find Kagawa. So yeah, good performance from Cerezo. Tosu, they're a little bit, I'm not really sure what to make of Tosu. I think occasionally they can burst into life and be brilliant, but there are a few too many errors at the moment for Tosu. They're a team that can't string a 90 minutes together. So it was a slightly worry for them, but I thought Cerezo, they needed this victory after a pretty dodgy start to the season.
Indeed. So, Kato provided the first for Kagawa, and then he scored Cerezo's second. He was completely unmarked in the centre to head home a pinpoint cross in from the left by Hirotaka Tamida, 7 minutes into the second half. And then with the 4 minutes left, Fuchi Honda rolled in a Shinya Nakano cutback from 12 yards out to set up a tense finish, or so we thought. But a minute from time, Yoichi Naganuma was shown a pretty harsh second yellow card, and Tosu finished with 10 men, and Cerezo were able to see out a first league victory of the season. So, Johnny, I mean, there's only 2 points separating your side, Gumba, and Cerezo at the moment. They do have one victory on the board, but of course they'd come into this game having lost their previous two in the league. So, how have you seen their start, and how important will this victory be for them going forward, do you think?
It's definitely been a tough start for them. And, you know, I think that they won the midweek in the Levan Cup and winning here, that's obviously going to give them confidence. You know, in the last game I mentioned about Marinos, almost a kind of missed opportunity against Jubilo. They didn't rotate any players and didn't really learn a whole lot. Whereas, you know, as Sam mentioned, they got a few players back, and I think they used the Levan Cup very well to get them up to match fitness and get them up to speed so they could get right off from the off here against Tosu. And, you know, I'm what Sam said about Tosu, we're not really sure about them. I think Tosu might actually be a bit lucky this year. There's only one team goes down, because I think if there was three relegation places at the moment, but barring that result against Nagoya, they were dreadful against Shonan. They had a moment of Archie Gemmell against, for Scotland against Holland, inspired brilliance from Kabayama to get a draw with Gamba. And they didn't really deserve it, I wouldn't say. And then they were second best here again. So from what I've seen of them, the second goal here, acres of space. It's a lovely cross from Tamada, but finally getting some kind of end product from him. A lovely header from Kato. But the amount of space he's got is... And it's not the first time for Tosu this season. They've just been cut wide apart. I know Hwang Suk Ho's out. And Nakano was back for this game, but yeah, I think they've got a lot of work ahead of them. I think Cerezo will be interesting because Crooks and Ciara were both out here. Essentially, they are players you'd expect to start more than they don't. So how they manage to work them back in and make it work, we'll see. But definitely a huge step in the right direction this past week for Cerezo. Tosu, yeah, I don't have too much positive to make their fans feel any better, I'm afraid.
Right. Okay. So, yeah, definitely an important victory for Cerezo, and a lot of work to do for Kenta Kawai and his Tosu team, especially, yeah, as Johnny said, the marking for, Kato's goal was, well, it was non-existent. So, he'll be looking to drill his players, I'm sure, over the course of the week, and they'll look for a better performance in the weeks to come. But, all right, so they are the three teams that won for the first time over the weekend, Hiroshima, Sapporo and Cerezo Osaka. So after a quick hit of music, we'll come back and round up the rest of the match day four results. Welcome back. Next, we'll head to the Hitachidai Stadium where Kashiwa hosted Nagoya on Sunday. And this one ended up a comfortable 3-0 victory for the visitors. After a decent number of chances at both ends in the first half hour, Grampus went ahead 4 minutes before the break through a brilliant Kasper Juncker strike from the edge of the box. And the big Dane almost doubled his fun in first half stoppage time, his rasping volley too close to Tatsuya Morita, who saved to his right. But Johnny, yeah, what a special it was from Juncker. Another example, if any more was needed, of his predatory nature. A fantastic goal to give Grampus their lead.
Yeah, that's exactly what he's been brought to Grampus for. And it's interesting because before the season started, we were talking, I think, you know, Graham Fritchie was saying that there's the two sides of Juncker, the performance and character and everything, which side's going to turn up. And so far in the first four games, two goals, two assists, I think Nagoya have basically got everything they could possibly have hoped for. If he can keep up that kind of form, that kind of intensity for the whole season, then, you know, Nagoya near the top of the league, why can't they stay there? It was a wonderful finish. Lovely, lovely finish.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. And their second, 7 minutes after the break, was a stunner too. Kensuke Nagai leading a counter-attack and playing the ball out to Juncker on the right, then continuing his run, receiving Juncker's return pass on the move. And after shifting back onto his right foot, curling a tremendous finish from the edge of the box inside Morita's far post. Sam, I'm certainly not used to strikes like this from Nagai's time at FC Tokyo, but if he's going to be firing in goals like this, then I think the rest of J1 better watch out.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I spoke about it last week, but the link-up play between Juncker and Nagai this season has been fantastic. And it started with Juncker, and also, like, yeah, his predatory nature and his goals are great. But what he adds to this Nagoya team is his ability to pick the ball up on halfway and carry it. And he carries them 20, 30 yards quite often in this Nagoya team. And then he's got Nagai, an ever-willing runner around him, and they've linked up so well. They've got an understanding. It's a lovely pass into Nagai. The first touch is perfect for him, takes the defender out, gets him into space in midfield, takes one more touch to set himself, and it's a fantastic finish. And those two have just really started this season on fire, and the worry for the league is that still Mateus, who I think is the best of the three, hasn't got going yet. So when he does, oh, there, look at some defenses are in trouble. Although I will say the Kashua defense was a little bit generous, as they are want to be this season. They left a lot of space for Nagoya to be able to play through them a lot. I think their midfield also let them down. There was no real combative nature in that midfield, because I think Nagoya, that's been their problem this season, is that they haven't really got the ball forward to their front three enough, but they were given very little in, there was very little standing in their way in this game. They were allowed to play it through quite freely, and Nagoya capitalized on that with some fantastic goals.
Well, yeah, Johnny, you won't mind if I go back to Sam and to chat about the third goal. As yes, one of his favourite whipping boys was, well, to say he's heavily involved is obviously a massive understatement. As with the 20 minutes left, Reysol's miserable afternoon was complete when Ryoya Morishita crossed from the right, and with Junker ready to pounce behind him, Yugo Tatsuta slid in to try and clear, but the ball deflected up off Morita and looped into the net for an own goal. So, Sam, fire away.
Yeah, he can't even get an own goal right. He still manages to get it off his goalkeeper. He gets himself into a really poor position. The goalkeeper and Tatsuta both go for the same ball. It ends in absolute shambles, as you would imagine. And, yeah, just... I do like to I kind of want him to keep starting, because it's quite an easy go-to for me on every episode, but I think he really needs to be taken out of the firing line. I don't know what he was doing being signed in the first place. He's clearly not up to the standard. This can happen to a lot of players, this sort of mistake, but it's just his overall play. He's never in the right position, and it is so easy. They tried in this game a lot of teams that are poor defensively decide to go for three at the back, because they decide more players around it is more chance that they'll cover up for the mistake. But that didn't even happen here. It's just so poor. And I still don't know why anyone saw what he did at Shimizu last year in the worst defence and thought, we'll bring him into Reysol, because it's just turned them into the worst defence alongside others. No one's necessarily helped him. But yeah, I think once Tanaka comes back from the under-20, the Asian under-20 games, I think he should get into this side, and Tatsuta really needs to be given a break. As Sasaki wasn't, this needs to be taken out of the firing line, because unfortunately, he's just not good enough. And I don't know why that hasn't been seen before, because I think Nelsinho could play himself in that position. He'd get a similar return. I think Takamine should go back there. He did that position for Sapporo last year. I think he's a better option. I think anyone's a better option. Unfortunately for Tatsuta, I say with a smile on my face. Yeah, it's just really poor, unfortunately. And I will lay off him. Sorry, Yuga.
All right then. So I'm sure, I know you've had that pent up since Sunday afternoon, Sam. So I'm sure it felt good to get it out. Now, Johnny, Kashiwa also yet to win. They have, apart from slight differences in goals scored and goals conceded, they have basically the exact same pattern of results as Gumba, having drawn their first two and lost their last two. Are you feeling slightly more panicky about them than you are about your own team? I mean, Sam's mentioned so many times about the problems they're having at the back. I mean, they huffed and puffed a little bit here, but they couldn't get anything past Mitch Langerak. I mean, they won't be the last team that happens to this year, I realise. And, in Mal Hosoya and a couple of his comrades up front, I mean, they do have a decent threat in attacking areas. But, yeah, do you feel that these problems defensively, you're just going to hamstring them for the majority of the season, unless somehow Nelsinho is able to sort them out?
Yeah, I think that's where I really worry about is the back. I said in the green room, I feel a bit sorry for Yugo Tatsuta, so I don't really want to have a go at him. There's maybe a Yokohama FC defender, though, that might cop it for me later. But, I mentioned in pre-season about Sasaki's stats weren't actually that good last year, and it's blown up in their face this year. And then, I think Sam mentioned Tatsuta and Katayama both coming in from Shimizu from the worst defence. I have been surprised about how badly things have gone wrong. I know they drew with Gamba and FC Tokyo. And after those first two games, I thought, they'll be in mid-table somewhere. And they still have Douglas, I presume, is out injured. And Diego can come into that back three. and I don't know how you actually pronounce his name in his native language, but in Katakana it's written as Froto, the Dutch forward, who presumably would strengthen this team. But slightly worryingly, like, you know, Nelsinho, he dropped Cento and Yamada for this game, and then he had Kawaguchi as a wide centre back, and he's sort of shoving Takamine forward. He sort of made changes that didn't make a whole lot of sense. Like, he's sort of weakening the side just for the sake of making changes. So if I was a Kashiwa fan, with only one team going down, I wouldn't be worried about automatic relegation, but I would be worried about the direction my side are going, particularly as, again, I only caught really the highlights of this, although I have seen a couple of the Kashiwa's full games earlier in the year. And it seems like, you know, Savio to Hosoya is really the sole source of goals. If Hosoya was to go like in the middle of the season, or if Savio was to get injured, there's no guarantee any of those players I mentioned before are going to come back or do anything. So, you know, in terms of goals, there's no disgrace, not, as you say, not scoring against Nagoya. But yeah, if I was a Kashiwa fan, I would be a bit worried. Whereas, you know, Nagoya, on the other hand, I know you can make an argument that, you know, Yokohama FC, Kyoto, Tosu, Kashiwa, they might all finish in the bottom half. But I think, you know, I think both sets of supporters would have left the stadium on Sunday in completely different moods. I think Nagoya destined for the top. Kashiwa definitely a lot of things to work on, a lot of things to be a bit concerned about at the moment, I think.
Indeed. So, yeah, a third victory of the season already for Nagoya, and they are joint top with Kobe on 9 points. We're coming on to their first loss of the season very shortly. But before we touch on that game, let's travel over to the Big Swan, where Niigata hosted Kawasaki, Albirex at home for the second straight week. And again, a bumper crowd, this time of over 26,000 fronted up. And they saw their heroes in orange put on another tremendous performance with another one of Sam's favourites, this one for positive reasons. Ryotaro Ito enhancing his burgeoning reputation with the only goal of the game in the 22nd minute. Sam, that would have made you feel good, because just before that, of course, another one of your boyfriends, Ryota Oshima, had gone off injured just for a change. So, definitely swings and roundabouts. And for you, in the space of 4 or 5 minutes in this first half.
Yeah, an emotional roller coaster. But poor Oshima. Why can't he ever last more than like 3 games? And yeah, he's gone again, and we won't see him for another few months, which is a real shame because he's such a good player. But yeah, I think he maybe just needs to go into coaching or something at this moment. It's just not working for him. But yeah, it was great that Ito is my new boyfriend. Ito was just fantastic again. It's a lovely goal. It's a little bit similar to the one he scored last week, where he just kind of cuts out a few defenders. I think he gives Jung the eyes. Everyone thinks he's going for the far post, beats him at the near post. A terrific effort, really well positioned. And yeah, it's just what a season he's had. 2 goals, 2 assists already. I know people are lining him up for the national team, and I mean, maybe he's a bolter into the squad that is announced on Wednesday, who knows. Lots of competition obviously in his position, but yeah, I mean, he's doing himself no harm, is he? He's been absolutely magnificent. I thought Niigata were terrific again in this game. It's not quite as eye-catching a performance as the way that they were in that first half against Hiroshima, for example, but I think they showed such flexibility in the way that they were able to play in this game, that if they needed to, they could control possession and really put Kawasaki on the back foot. They were very comfortable also in sitting really deep and counter-attacking, and they changed it whenever it was necessary in the game. If they were sitting back for too long and Kawasaki were getting a head of steam up, they then were able to switch it. And I thought they were just to manage this game so well. They've got so many good creative players going forward. Mito and Ota are playing almost as well as Ito as well up there. I think the midfield of Ko especially is so key in that team. And defensively, they've had a few injuries in there. Chiba was out, Horigome has missed a few, but whoever they play in, they can still buy into the way that Niigata want to play out from the back. They're all very comfortable on the ball, and this was just a really good performance. And Kawasaki very rarely in this game looked too threatening. And Niigata, they've now beaten is it 3 of the last season's top 6 already? Oh no, they've beaten 2 of them and drawn with Cerezo. They've been magnificent and deserve their place in the top 3 currently.
Yeah, it's remarkable, isn't it, Johnny? The only team yet to lose after four match days in the top flight this year. And yes, as Sam says, up in third and on their performances so far, you'd have to say on merit, Ito is doing tremendously well. But yes, he's not the Lone Ranger, as Sam's mentioned, a couple of his partners in crime there. And I mean, yeah, the finish is tremendous for his goal. That came 10 minutes after an audacious lobbed effort from 25 yards that just missed at Jung's left-hand post, and he tried another one of those later on in the game. So to say he's bubbling over with confidence, I think, is a massive understatement, but he's just really enjoying expressing himself on the big stage, isn't he, Ito?
Yes, yeah, it's funny. If I go back again to that Gamba game just at the end when I was saying about how the players are panicking and don't lack in the confidence, Ito is just the complete opposite of that. You can just tell he's a player who's at one with himself. He's reveling in this role because he's been in J1 squads before at Urawa, and he was also at Oita, and it just didn't happen for him. And he's always dropped down to J2 and had a good spell on loan at a club like Mito. And he's always looked a bit too good for J2. But I never really thought he would come up to J1 and do the business like he has. And also, it was worth to mention that, you know, Yoshiaki Takagi, who filled that number 10 role with Ito Mora out in the wing for a large part of last season and has been a mainstay for Niigata for years, he's still recovering from a knee injury. So Ito has really taken the mantle of, he's the leader in that kind of three behind the main forward. He's in the number 10. You know, he is Niigata's attack at the minute. He's the fulcrum of it. And he's bringing those others, as Sam said, Mito and Ota into it. Ota doesn't even seem like a new signing. I think, you know, myself and Hajime Moriyasu don't always agree on national team selection. I'd say I would be very, very surprised if Ito made the national team based on the fact he has been a J2 player for a while and it's only been four games so far. But I think he'll be on Moriyasu's little notepad of players to keep an eye on. The other player I wanted to mention, actually, to give equal praise, and not just because he was my one to watch in the pre-season preview, is that the goalkeeper, Yosuke Kojima. And talking of the national team, I think he might actually, if you're looking at a Niigata player to get in, he could be the one to watch. Because I think Keisuke Osako had a brilliant game against Gambo, but prior to that, he hadn't done anything wrong, but he hadn't done much right. Tani's now out of the Gamba team, Sasaki's been dropped, Suzuki's not playing. Gonda's in J2, and Moriyasu says he won't pick J2 goalkeepers. And, you know, Kojima, every time I see him, I feel reassured, and I'm not a Niigata fan. He just has that great command of his box, coming out, limbing crosses, shot stopping. It seems like defenders have a lot of faith in him. And he's bounced back from injuries to sort of reclaim his spot as one of the top sort of younger goalkeepers. So, you know, I think you're looking at, surely Kawashima's going to be dropped. And Gonda will be out. So you could see Daniel Schmidt and Kojima and Osako in that national team. Do you think I'm right with that, Sam? Or do you think it might be a bit longer before someone like Kojima makes it into the team?
No, I've been very impressed by him. And it's not like he would be a complete newbie. I think he was in, what was it, an AF Cup squad, or it was a Copa America, whatever version of it it was. But he was in the national team previously, of like, I think, only on the bench or anything. But there's definitely gaps there. Kawashima mercifully has retired. I still imagine he ends his retirement and comes back in this squad. I still fear that, but thankfully he should be gone. And yeah, if Gonda's not going to be picked either, being in J2, there are two openings. And yeah, why not Kojima? Because previously you'd think Osako and Tani are probably fighting for one of those places. And Tani being dropped now, I can't see him making the squad here. And yeah, he's been more impressive this season so far than Osako, not to say Osako's done anything wrong. I would like to throw another name in. I'd like Kosuke Nakamura to be given another chance. I think he's doing very well in Portugal at Porto Valença. I think maybe 5 or 6 years ago, we were sitting on this pod saying that maybe Nakamura would be the goalkeeper for the next 10 years. It's not quite gone that way. I think various concussions and whatnot haven't helped him, but I think he's someone who could step up. But yeah, Kojima, I think, has got everything you want in him. I think he's just so confident. He's so comfortable coming for crosses, which is like a thing that a lot of Japanese goalkeepers do struggle with. I think he's very good as a shot stopper, comfortable on the ball, knows what decision to make, when to play it short, when to go longer. I think he's, yeah, very well-rounded. So, yeah, very impressed with him. And if he makes it as the second or third choice goalkeeper, I don't think he'd look out of place in the Japan national team.
All right, guys. Well, that's terrific. And yeah, you've gone a long way towards answering Brett's question from our Patreon only line group. And I know, Sam, you did directly respond to Brett a couple of days ago. But so while we're on the topic, we know there'll have to be change between the sticks with the national team squad with, yes, Kawashima retiring, though, yes, in inverted commas. And as with Sam, I'll believe it when I actually see it. And he's actually not in a bib on the bench when Japan play the next game. And yes, Moriyasu's policy of not picking a J2 keeper means that, yes, Shuichi Gonda will almost certainly not be there either. So what about elsewhere? If it's a little bit too early for Ito, as anybody else maybe who might have been in the bigger picture in the lead up to the World Cup, have they enhanced their prospects at all, Sam, do you think, over the course of the first four match days? Or are you expecting the on-field makeup of the Moriyasu squad will be pretty much as it was in Qatar?
I think it'll be generally similar, but I think there are avenues to get into this squad. I think left back especially, Nagatomo hasn't retired at all, but I think you've got to move away from him. And I mean, the lack of left back was so evident in the World Cup. So I think there's an option there. I imagine Nagata would maybe be, if you were picking a J1 left back, I think maybe he's at the front of the queue. I think you saw against Sapporo, they really missed him at left back. So maybe he would be one to come in. I think otherwise, players that I've heard names recognised, Keito Nakamura, former Gamba player, is doing very well at Linz. He's got a lot of goals. So he's been linked with teams like Liverpool. I know there are lots of options that Japan have in those wide areas, but yeah, he might be another that comes in. And I'm just looking at elsewhere. You're looking at striker. Maeda's picked up an injury at Celtic, so you think there's an opening there. I've seen a report that Asano won't be picked, and he might not be picking certain players who are involved in relegation battles in Europe. So I think that leaves an opening. It was that Moriyasu was at Kashima at the weekend. Could we potentially see Yuma Suzuki come into it? I think probably not, but I don't think there's many better strikers in the J-League than Yuma Suzuki, so I think he should be looked at. You could also maybe look at Hosoya, who could come in as an option there. So I think those are positions that are at least open. Anyone else that has jumped out at you, Johnny?
I don't really know about the Japanese players playing in Europe, and I kind of jotted down a few players in J1, more on the kind of, I think, potentially in June or September, October, they might get in. But kind of left back is obviously a problem area, and perhaps because like Nagatomo is an FC Tokyo player, the name I actually wrote down was Kashif Bangnagande. I wondered, it would be a bolt from the blue, but it would be very much a bolt from the blue from Moriyasu. He might be someone who could look to get in the near future. And it's funny you mentioned Moriyasu was it Kashima, and the player I wrote down was actually Kaishu Sano, but I think we'll get on to why he might not actually make the squad this time. It didn't go quite as well as he might have hoped, but I think he might be someone to look at down the line, and maybe not in terms of his J1 performance, but national team terms, like Atsuki Ito, again, he's someone we'll talk about later on. I think he's done quite well, and Mitsuki Saito as well. I don't honestly think any of those midfielders I've named have a chance of getting in this squad, but I think, again, that they'll be in Mr. Moriyasu's little black book, as will a number of players that you've just mentioned there. But yeah, but very interested to see. I think I noticed that South Korea named their squad today, Japan are a couple of days later. So yeah, looking forward to the squad with keen interest. How about Ben? Is there anyone you've seen you think might have an outside bet of getting in?
Well, yeah, there's definitely an opening at left back, and I think it's going to be too soon for Kashif, and I'm still not really convinced he's going to end up being at that level. But anyway, he went off late on in the win against Yokohama FC, so whether he's going to, even if he would be under consideration, whether he would be available by the time the international break comes around, I'm not sure, but up front, you know, I just hope that players like Hosoya and even Koki Ogawa can just continue to state their cases. I mean, an out and out number nine is something that we've hoped that Japan can bring through for so many reasons. It appears he doesn't fancy Kyogo Furuhashi, even though so many of us are huge raps for him. So if he likes a different type of forward, then I just hope that the ones that are doing well in J1, continue to do so and continue to put themselves in Moriyasu's consideration. So thanks for your thoughts, guys, and thanks for your question, Brett. And I'm sure Kawasaki supporters have really enjoyed this little sidebar in the middle of us discussing their loss to Niigata on Saturday. We mentioned, Sam, that Ryota Oshima went off, and I mean the problems are just piling up for Toru Aniki, aren't they? Because we already know that Jeziel has returned to Brazil for a treatment on his knee injury that could rule him out for a majority of the season, if not the rest of it. And, you mentioned how flat they were last week in their draw. And, again, they did have chances here. There was a semblance of a fight back with the Wakizaka Miyashiro. I could really use a goal from him for my fantasy team. And Miki Yamane going close. But, yes, there was no way past Ryosuke Kojima, and Marcinho had a header from inside the 6-yard box, didn't he, with about 20 minutes to go, but that was straight at Kojima. So it wasn't Kawasaki's day, and it's fair to say it hasn't been their season so far with, as we said, the problems beginning to mount.
They're absolutely mounting. Another one, Yamamura went off at half-time. He's another defensive injury. And I should feel sorry for them, but I don't, because they had the chance. They knew that they didn't have many defenders. They didn't bother to buy anyone in the winter. This is an extreme example of a what can go wrong defensively with injuries. But, yeah, they weren't prepared for it at all. They've recalled Shuto Tanabe from a loan spell at Jeff United, but I mean, what defence are they going to be able to muster next weekend? I don't know. It just looks a bit of a mess. I think they were playing Sasaki in the second half at centre-back. Yuto Matsunagane played left-back, a young 18-year-old. I mean, it's just a little bit all over the place. And then you take out Oshima in there as well. It's just not really working for them. Lots of everything that could go wrong is going wrong, but on the field, they don't look a thing like Kawasaki from previous years. They had a couple of chances here, the Marcinho one especially, but a lot of their build-up play was very laboured. It was very much in front of Niigata. No one was really looking to go in behind. Nobody was really showing any sort of creativity to break down a very good Niigata team. I think their best players are playing pretty poorly. I think Yamane, we didn't mention that in the national team, but right back I think is another issue, because obviously Sakai is coming towards the end of his time with the national team. Yamane, I don't think, played well in the World Cup in his one game that he played there, and I think he's been poor this season. I know he's playing a different sort of role and trying to come in field, but it's really not working. I don't think Ianaga's at the level that we're used to him playing at. Wakizaka likewise. So I think their best players aren't playing well. They're losing too many players to injury. And the system is just not working. I think Damian is vital to get back into this side, just to give them an out ball, because when it doesn't work and they can't find Miyashiro, you can't just lump it into him. You can't go for that second option. So, yeah, Damian, I think, is vital to come back. But at the moment, nothing is working. And, yeah, they had a couple of chances here, but I thought generally Niigata were very, very comfortable.
And, Johnny, I'm sure you've got the world's smallest violin out to play a sorry tune for Kawasaki after their success over the last 5 or 6 years. But, you can see that they're just not quite the same team, are they? And, I mean, that's understandable. We've spoken about it so many times over the last couple of years, the amount of talent they've lost. And now with the injuries returning to Oshima and Jeziel, it does look a pretty precarious situation. We know that Oniki has got the best out of this squad for so many years, so it would be foolish to write them off early doors. But yes, it's just 4 points from 4 games, and that's very un-Frontale-like.
Yeah, I was actually kind of wrote in my notes, if you think back to like 2020, 2021, like how many times did you watch a Kawasaki game and after like 20 or 25 minutes, both teams had one shot, but Kawasaki were winning 1-0, and it just makes it so much easier when you're ahead for most of the game. Whereas Kawasaki, as Sam said, is just they're lacking that directness and forward movement and ability to break teams down, especially early on, which just leaves them susceptible to, the longer the game goes 0-0, the more kind of luck or the other team having a 5 or 10 minute good spell and then scoring comes into play. They don't look like scoring enough goals that's going to make them comfortable in any kind of game. Apart from that kind of Kashima game, which is almost like a grudge match, and they were right up against it and they just had to go for it. Other than that, they've kind of flattered to deceive. But, you know, as you say, Ben, it's Kawasaki, because they've been so strong for so long, always finishing the top five or six. I think, you know, at the moment they're 14th. I don't see them finishing anywhere like that. Damian coming back in, I mean, his age and been out for so long, we assume he'll be able to help them. But, I mean, him and Kobayashi, what kind of level are they going to be able to play at? They'll be like, you know, like Ian Aga sort of falling off a bit. When players get to that age, sometimes, you know, that sharpness just doesn't come back. But, yeah, we'll see. Oniki's fixed things before. There is plenty of quality still in that squad. Despite we're making lots of negative comments, they did only lose 1-0. It's not like they've ever been out of games this season. So I don't think anyone's quite lining up Kawasaki as an easy fixture just yet. I think we haven't seen the last of them. That's why I wouldn't write them off, not at all.
No, fair enough then. All right then. So, yes, it finished at 1-0 to Niigata up at the Big Swan on Saturday. The other game on Saturday also ended 1-0, and also thanks to a stunning first half strike. Urawa travelled to Kobe and they took the lead in the 21st minute when a long diagonal ball forward from Marius Hoybraten was knotted down intelligently by a backtracking Tomoaki Okubo, with Atsuki Ito arriving in the centre to power home a spectacular leaping left-footed volley. One of my favourites, even though he plays for Reds, scoring a terrific goal to open the scoring. It was a great weekend for the Itos. No relation, we believe. Kobe looked to hit back with Yuya Osako and ex-Reds man Koya Yuruki heavily involved in the chances, as you'd expect. But Hoybraten almost put the game to bed in the 69th minute, heading a corner to the far post against the woodwork. Vissel almost nicked a point at the death. A long ball forward from Daiya Maekawa was headed on by Yuki Honda for Yoshinori Muto, whose cutback found Toya Izumi. But the substitute's close-range stab from inside the six-yard box was claimed by a perfectly placed Shusaku Nishikawa, and Reds could celebrate back-to-back wins, while Kobe's perfect season has come to an end, where their perfect record has come to an end after winning their first three games. So, this will be another huge boost of confidence for Reds, I think, Sam, as Kobe, as we said, coming in top of the pile. But terrific goal from Ito got them going, and a couple of chances aside, they did look fairly comfortable here. So was this the coming out party for the Schultz Hoybraten back line, do you think?
Well, they performed very well defensively. I think they've got an understanding now. And, considering the confidence that Kobe would have come into this game with, I think for them to have limited them to so few chances, I think is absolutely great for that back line. I think they were pretty solid and did just about enough going forward. I still don't think it was a vintage Reds performance. I don't think they did a great deal. They took their goal very well and defended very well after that. So decent enough. They'll take a lot of positives from getting this victory against the Kobe side, who, have looked very, very good in the first three games. But, we're just off it here. I don't think they offered a great deal first half. They didn't respond to the goal from Reds, and then it took a while to get going. But second half, a couple of chances. But, it wasn't like the clinical Kobe side that we'd seen last weekend. So they'll be disappointed with the performance, Kobe. But Reds, there's signs that they're getting a little bit better. I think the move, and it's still strange to say that the move to a 36-year-old striker has given them a bit more energy up front, but it has. And he's able to go a little bit beyond defenders. They're able to stretch them. They did. It's not necessarily a long ball forward, but it stretched that defence. It was a little bit of danger for them. And they were playing in the first couple of games too much just in front of defences and allowing them to be like compact and very easy. It was very easy for teams to defend against Reds. Now they're changing things up a little bit more. It is creating a few spaces and creating some chances. So a good victory for them. It's a good step forward, and I think they confirmed, or have almost confirmed, Jose Kante. They played for some Chinese side. I can't remember who off the top of my head, but he's coming in, a Guinean international forward. So that's another option that's finally got over the line. So hopefully adding that to the ranks will add a little bit more options going forward. And we'll start to see this team really settle into the way that Scorcher wants them to play.
Okay, very good, Sam. Thanks for that. And yet another new signing for Reds supporters to get excited about by the sounds of it. So, yes, Kobe's perfect record was ended as Reds won for the second straight game, as did Kyoto. They made it to 2 wins from 4 games. And just like Reds, after losing their first two, have now won 2 on the spin after they travelled to Shonan on Sunday. Inside the first 20 minutes, Tariq El-Yunusi forced an excellent low save from Tomoya Wakahara after a delicious back heel from Shuto Machino. Then up the other end, just before the half hour, across from the right, found Kosuke Kinoshita at the far post, but he headed straight at Boom Seung-kyun. 10 minutes into the second half, Kinoshita struck as Sanga took the lead. An overlapping run and cross from Kosuke Shirai was swept home on the volley. First time by Kinoshita, his first top flight goal since his move from J2 Mito. And, well, yeah, I saw firsthand last week, Johnny, Kinoshita's threat. You might remember he had the ball in the net inside 5 minutes, but the goal was ultimately disallowed after a VAR check. But, yeah, it was a very promising debut for him against FC Tokyo last week at home. And then this will obviously do his confidence no damage at all. A terrific goal to, open his J1 account, as I said, 10 minutes into the second half.
Yeah, I don't want to insult any Kyoto fans, but definitely from the highlights, this game had a feel of a bit of a smash and grab. It seemed to be a lot of Shonan chances, and then Kyoto caught them in the counter with a lovely assist from Shirai, and as you say, a very, very tidy finish from Kinoshita. And, you know, again, as we mentioned in the pre-season preview, that Kyoto had a lot of forwards, but none of them with particularly much pedigree. But I think the last couple of games they've gone with Kinoshita, Patrick, and Yamada as a front three. And I mean, how long that trio can stay consistent remains to be seen. But I think last week you've seen against FC Tokyo, they played very well. And here they played very well. I mean, Shonan, I think I was being criticised after round one for putting them in my bottom three. But yeah, after a home defeat to Kyoto and a draw with Yokohama FC, it doesn't look too bad now. But I think they're almost kind of victims of their own success. That first game, everything went right for them. And obviously finishing 12th last year means that teams like Kyoto, who may in the past have gone to Shonan and maybe have attacked him a bit more, are sitting back. And I don't think Shonan really relish the role of favourites and having to force the game. So I think that's maybe where they've kind of come a cropper. Because I watched them last week against Kawasaki and I thought they were really good. They're slightly unfortunate to not win at Todoroki again. But here it seems like, yeah, Kyoto played them beautifully. They sucked up the pressure and then really struck decisively in the counter-attack.
Yeah, you're right. A number of chances for Bomari throughout after they had fallen behind. Another chance for El-Yunusi, then Taiyo Hiraoka, Shuto Yamamoto, and Kosuke Onose were unable to score before Kyoto killed the game off with a goal on the break, 15 minutes from time. Patrick released down the left and bouncing off a challenge before squaring for Fuki Yamada, who had time to pick his spot before curling a terrific finish past Bomb. So, Kyoto, you've got to give them credit. Sam, I did through gritted teeth last week after they beat Tokyo, but that was entirely on merit, and Tokyo were very poor. But yes, they've gone away from home and shown that was no fluke, because it's a terrific victory for Kyoto. And a game like this away at a team who I guess most observers expect these two teams will finish in around the same kind of area of the table, whether that is a relegation dogfight or not, whether these two teams sink down that far or not. Yes, a win like this away at a prospective rival is a huge one for Choku Jay and his side.
Oh, absolutely. It was back to the wall for a large part of this, but I think you'll see it as a perfect away performance to come away with a 2-0 victory. I thought they were clinical with the chances that they had. Otherwise, there's only one, I think, where Song made a really good double save from Kinoshita, so it could have been even more for Kyoto. I thought that, yeah, that front three as it is, mainly Patrick and Kinoshita, I think their link-up play has been really good. I think that should be settled now for at least a little while. Again, yeah, can they consistently score goals? I'm not convinced by that, but the early signs in the last two games have been good. They were a little bit fortunate, I thought, defensively. Shonan should have equalised on a number of occasions. I think Yamamoto's was probably the clearest one unmarked. I think Wakahara had misjudged the cross as well, so it turned out it was quite an open goal that Yamamoto ended up missing. So it rode their luck a little bit, but yeah, two wins from two, great for Kyoto, and they'll take any moment where they're sitting in eighth in the table and in relative comfort. So yeah, really good for them, great turnaround, because again, their first two performances were pretty poor, and it looked like we were quite right to have them bottom of our J-Preds. But they've shown some life, and yeah, that's great to see.
Indeed, indeed. All right, so yes, as we've just mentioned, FC Tokyo were Kyoto's victims last week, and they look to bounce back at home against Yokohama FC with their Diego Oliveira getting them off to a perfect start when he received Hotaka Nakamura's cutback just beyond the penalty spot in the fifth minute. He turned and rolled home a low left-footed shot past Kengo Nagai, but Tokyo ultimately run out 3-1 winners here, guys, but for me, a Yokohama FC supporter can leave this game feeling pretty hard done to, and if it wasn't for Tokyo's Polish goalkeeper Jakub Slovic, then this could easily have ended level. Yokohama FC's defending was poor at times, to say the least. I mean, they basically gifted the second goal to Teruhito Nakagawa when Boniface Nduka, his pass across the box was just ridiculous and easily intercepted and dinked home by Nakagawa. But apart from that, I mean, there was a couple of stunning Slovic saves that, absolutely fantastic goalkeeping of the highest order. And he's bailed his side out a couple of times where unfortunately for Yokohama FC, Kengo Nagai has not been able to. But, I'll come back to you, Sam. I mean, it was 3-1 ultimately looks a comfortable scoreline, and Diego Oliveira's got his brace and he's got the plaudits at the end of the day. But, I'm certainly not counting any chickens after this victory. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's great to bounce back. It's great to score three goals and win the game. But if it wasn't for Slovic's heroics, this could easily have ended 3-3.
Yeah, this is a weird game, this one, because I thought Tokyo were very much the better team and controlled the vast majority of the game, but then their goalkeeper was maybe the key component to that, so it's a very odd one. I thought Tokyo going forward were pretty good. They capitalised on a lot of woeful Yokohama defending. I think Johnny was setting himself up for a go at Boniface and Duke, so I'll leave it up to him a little bit later. But yeah, going forward they looked good. Tokyo had a lot better than they had done in the previous game against Kyoto. But yeah, it was the Slovic show at times at the back. I think he made some fantastic saves, some fingertip saves to deny Yuri Lima. Ogawa, I think he saved from him on a couple of occasions as well. Yeah, so indebted to him. I suppose there were a little bit of changes at the back. You obviously lost Nakamura to injury in the first half. Then Morishige didn't start but came on at half time. Then you lost your left back, so a few changes in front of him, and maybe that unsettled the defence as a whole, and Slovic had to be at his best to really deny them. But I thought still, despite that, I thought Tokyo were full value for the victory. I thought they were generally in control, and it was a good response from the woeful performance against Kyoto last week. But yeah, I'll go over to Johnny, who can talk us through Yokohama FC's defending.
Well, yeah, I think you mentioned it last week or the week before about Gabriel being injured and how big a loss that was. And, you know, the defending wasn't even particularly great with Gabriel in there. I think, you know, one of the concerns we had was the amount of players they signed, and it seems like they've signed an awful lot of players, but they've not really become much better, especially at the back where they've got Iwatake, who I'm not even sure can really play centre back in a two-man defence. And yeah, Boniface Nduka, I know that the patrons will know, I think John Steele did a kind of four-part series over the winter, and I was on it with him, and I think it was the day they signed Boniface or a couple of days before that they'd signed him. And obviously John has more, like, he has more interest and knowledge about Yokohama FC than me, and we both agreed from a J2 viewpoint that it wasn't a particularly good signing. He's been around for a few years in mid-table in J2, and to bring him up to J1, I think he's got to go into the Tadsta category of, you know, people look at his physique and his height, and they think that that's why I'll sign that defender and we can teach him defending, but it doesn't always work that way. Yeah, the last couple of weeks I've been reading a book called The Barcelona Complex. It's a really good book, and it talks about how they used to like measure the players' wrists, and if they didn't project to being over 180 centimetres, they wouldn't sign them, and then they changed all that. And sometimes, yeah, Japanese scouting, I think it leaves a lot to be desired, especially like the defenders. They just look at the height and physicality, that mentioned Boniface and Tatsuta. Even people like Ominami and Kamijima, I'll argue they are J1 level defenders, but they shouldn't really be at the top two sides from last season. So, yeah, but Boniface, I think it's going to be a recurring theme. He's all right, but, you know, he's going to let you down time and time again, I think, in crucial moments. And I think that's going to be Yokohama FC's ultimate undoing, that they can go to places like FC Tokyo and they can put in performances, create chances, but if they don't take it, then they're going to end up, you know, conceding three goals. You have to score four goals. That's asking a lot past a defence with Jakub Slovic behind it, and, you know, a team that finished in the top six last season. And, you know, that's all very negative. So maybe if I change it a bit more positive, because I have been practicing the name Tawara Tsumida all afternoon. So I think I nailed it. He was in the left wing, and Tsubasa Teriyama was in the midfield. And you've got, you know, Yuto Arai came on as a sub. And in midweek, I think you'd a 16-year-old Yunosuke Sato, if I wrote it down correctly. So a lot of young players been given a chance. You know, I know Teriyama had played for the under-23s before, and I think he'd played as a designated special player, I think a couple of seasons ago. So I expected him to challenge, but Tawara Tsumida, he just wasn't on my radar. You know, that the patrons would have saw in my depth chart, his name wasn't there. It probably wouldn't have fitted anyway. But but when I got my Meikan, I used the translation app, and, you know, it said he was very highly rated and he was a very good dribbler. So the Meikan certainly seemed to think he would, you know, he'd have a chance of getting in. So I was wondering, Ben, what do you make of this kind of new blood? I know Tokyo have been a bit inconsistent in the past, so it's difficult to be consistent with these kind of youngsters, but in a way it must be quite an exciting time for Tokyo fans.
Yeah, I'm all for it, Johnny. Yeah, I'm just worried that we have to pay by the letter if we want to get his name on the back of our kit. But Tawara Tsumida is, one for the future. But, it looks like Albert has already put quite a bit of faith in him. So, I think, obviously, Ryoma Watanabe wasn't around. And, with Kuryu Matsuki obviously away with the under-20s and, all the different pieces needing to be put into his puzzle, Tawara Tsumida was handed the start here, and didn't look out of place at all. Might have, probably should have had his first top flight goal, but it was denied by Nagai. But I think it's part of a youth movement at the club that is long overdue. Although, you know, I want us to be challenging at the sharp end of the table this year. I don't necessarily want us to be betting in too many youngsters into the first team. But if Albert's seen enough in all of these players that he feels that they deserve a chance and are worthy of it and can contribute to Tokyo winning games, then I've just got to put my faith in that and go along for the ride. But obviously, there's still a lot of the old stages in there that need to be phased out gradually, I suppose. But it is very exciting to see, players like Tsuwara Tsumida and Arai getting their chances on the flanks. And, hopefully they can get some goals under their belt in the next few weeks and really help them kick on for the season ahead. It's a breath of fresh air, I think, is the right way to say it. And, ultimately, against Yokohama FC, an important 3 points for Tokyo, important that they bounce back. And, yet another example of how important Slovic is to them at the back with a couple of huge saves, as we've mentioned. Although they did, to me, appear seemingly out to make it hard on themselves. And the Yokohama FC goal came via a Yasuki Kimoto own goal on the brink of half time when he attempted to clear a Takumi Nakamura cross. There's a blast from the past for Tokyo supporters, but got his feet all wrong and bundled into his own net. While the Tokyo faithful were also welcoming back Hirotaka Mita, who of course left for Yokohama FC in the off season. But 3-1 it finished to Tokyo at Ajinomoto Stadium. Yokohama FC rock bottom with just 1 point from their four games. They've had hard lines in some of these games and ran into an inspired Slovak here. It could have been different for them, and they might have been doing a little bit better off. Ultimately, they're going to have to win a game sooner rather than later and, not be worrying about what might have been. They're going to have to actually go ahead and take a game by the scruff of the neck and win it. So, they'll hope a first win is just around the corner, perhaps on Saturday when they host Kyoto at Mitsuzawa. All right, so we've got one game left to go. Unfortunately for me, after the first three match days all had three draws, there was only one over the weekend. Although I guess for fans of teams winning matches of football, maybe just one draw was for the best. It came up at the Kashima Soccer Stadium. Fukuoka were the visitors. They came in on the back of two straight wins and went close in the 17th minute, but Yuya Yamagishi scuffed wide after Lukian's knockdown. This game, I guess it was sparked into life when Kaishu Sano was sent off for a second yellow card after dragging down Yamagishi in midfield in the 53rd minute. As it appeared after that, the 10 men of Kashima were hell-bent on claiming victory against the odds. There didn't appear to be any more chances for Fukuoka in the highlights that I saw anyway. And, Kei Chinen almost scored direct from a corner. It was all kicking off, but it ultimately ended goalless.
I don't know if I'd ever describe this game as all kicking off, to be quite honest with you, but... I was going to say, you could have played this game three times, you'd have had your three draws, because not very little happened. I thought Avispa was so poor, because they went into this game and I think they were quite happy with 0-0, but to play so long against 10 men and then have no ambition to go and win the game is so disappointing. I think it could have been there for them. Maybe if they opened themselves up, Kashima would eventually have broken them down and scored themselves, but I think that was a real chance for Avispa and they didn't even try to take it. I think it was a really dull game. I think there were a couple of chances for Kashima. They were the better team, even with 10 men. But I think the YouTube highlights that I got managed 2 minutes and 12 out of this game, which included Sano's yellow card and red card and the teams coming out. So that shows you how much they found out of this game. I can understand that Kashima not winning the game and not necessarily creating too many chances, given they were down to 10 men. But it looked quite, especially if you're saying, Chinen almost scored from a corner. That's not a chance, really, is it? It's just a corner, so that's just gone in close. But it was just, there wasn't anything really for either goalkeeper to massively do. It was just a dull game, a really dull game. And anyone listening to this, don't go out of your way to go and catch up on this game. Not that it'll take too much time to catch up on anything.
Well, I don't know how the DAZN Japan highlight package got to about 8 minutes then. But, I was distracted and I didn't notice the 16 replays of the one chance. But, Johnny, I guess this has to go down as a massive missed opportunity for Fukuoka. And, playing against 10 men for basically 40 minutes of this game. But as Sam said, they didn't show any ambition to go and win it at all. So, the travelling Fukuoka supporters will have been, by far the most disappointed at full time.
Yeah, I think you've got, on one hand, they've got 7 points, which is the same as Kashima, the same as FC Tokyo, and the same as Marinos. So, if the coach has to meet his bosses, at work, you can say that. Look where we are. But, like you say, 11 against 10, you would have thought it was the other way around. It seems like Kashima seemed to be inspired when the other team's got an extra man, because it was the opposite when they played against Kawasaki. They seemed to go to pieces after they were a player up. So, for Koka, it's been a very solid start overall, but, it could have been even better. I think for Kashima, now that's been played Kyoto, Kawasaki, Yokohama FC and Fukuoka. So, out of those four, they've fallen apart against Kawasaki, who are the only team people might fancy to genuinely challenge near the top. They're playing Yokohama F Marinos this week. We got a real test then. Fukuoka, yeah, I mean, the defence is solid, and I think it looks like they haven't really changed at all from last season. So they've maybe learned some lessons about getting caught at the back, but I think fans, if you've travelled all the way from Fukuoka to Kashima, maybe you do have a right to demand a bit more entertainment, a bit more effort to win the game, but I think Hasebe and the players and coaching staff, I don't think they'll be too disappointed at all.
Yeah, fair enough then. All right, it is one of their longest trips, Fukuoka, although, yeah, I mean, the hardly massive commutes are they in the J-League, but a decent trek up from Kyushu to Ibaraki, but it ended in frustration, I guess, for everybody, as it ended 0-0. So that's all nine games then from a match day four rounded up. And before we leave, and as we've already chatted about Brett's question on the national team squad call-ups, we'll just quickly look ahead to the match day five fixture list, with seven games coming up on Saturday and two on Sunday. Now, Johnny, you're part of the furniture here, but I'll give you the honour of going first. So I guess from Saturday, what is Johnny's pick of the weekend? Johnny's
pick of the weekend.
Well, I just alluded to it there. I think Yokohama F. Marinos against Kashima Antlers, because I think both of these teams, obviously big, big teams in Japan, so this is a big game, regardless of how well they're doing. But I think, more questions than answers at the moment for both of them. Marinos, didn't play well against Hiroshima. They didn't really play particularly well against Jubilo, and they've lost to Sapporo, their first league defeat of the season. Big chance to bounce back and get a bit of confidence and get a bit of feel-good factor around the place if they can dispatch Kashima. Kashima, on the other hand, like I said, they've played a few teams that they would be expected to beat, and also teams like Fukuoka, who just sat back and defended. Marinos are absolutely not going to do that, so it's a completely different change in style. It's going to have the big game feel, and honestly, I fancy Marinos to win, but I wouldn't be massively surprised if Kashima have got the big players, and Shoji's back. They've got Shoji Nueda at the back, Suzuki leading the line. Sano out is a bit of a loss, but Higuchi and Paducah in midfield, there's plenty of players that will fancy themselves to go and beat Marinos, and Marinos will have the bit between their teeth as well. So if I was to nudge the neutrals in any direction, I would nudge them towards that game on Saturday afternoon.
All right, an interesting pick, and you've stated your case very well there, Johnny. So over to you, Sam. What is Sam's pick of the weekend?
Sam's pick of the weekend.
I'm going to stay in Yokohama as well, and I'm not going to guarantee to anyone watching this that you'll get a similar quality of game necessarily, but I think it's as close as you can get to a 6-pointer 5 games into the season for Yokohama FC. I think if you look at any game that they play this year, Kyoto at home is one they absolutely have to win. They're the one team left without a victory this season, and I know Ben really wants to lead off with them next week to fill that up and get the schedule of the pod right. So hopefully Yokohama can turn up and give Kyoto a game. Kyoto have shown that they're happy to sit in and hit on the counter-attack. So I think it's going to be a really interesting one. I think Yokohama have to see this as a game that they really should be winning if they aren't to be that one team to get relegated. So, I'm calling an early 6-pointer at Mitsuzawa.
Okay, that's a really interesting shout, Sam. Yeah, and the two teams I've got, and you as well, right, in your bottom two, in your J-Pred, and they square off early doors with, Yokohama FC needing to notch a first win of the season. So, I don't mind that shout at all. You've left me, with my original pick, so I'll go ahead and make it. I think Urawa versus Niigata at Komaba, I've got it right this time, should be absolutely fantastic. Obviously, that smaller stadium with a much more intimate atmosphere than the cavernous Saitama Stadium should be absolutely rocking. Niigata will definitely fill their allotment to the brim, I'm sure. And the Red support will be in full voice with their team coming in on the back of two straight wins. So, Urawa versus Niigata for me, as Albert X put, the last unbeaten record on the line on Saturday should be a terrific game. But yes, there's intrigue up and down the country on Saturday with, Johnny hasn't mentioned Gamba entertaining Sapporo, which is a huge one for his side. And my boys FC Tokyo travel over to Nagoya to face former manager Kenta Hasegawa and former striker striker, Kensuke Nagai, who, as we've said earlier, scored a terrific goal. Nagoya's second on the weekend. So if he's in that sort of form again, look out the Tokyo back line. Slovic will have to be at his best again. So, yeah, there's some tremendous games on Saturday slate. Then we have two on Sunday, Hiroshima versus Kashiwa and Fukuoka versus Shonan. Shonan, of course, have happy memories of their most recent trip to Kyushu. Can they, put Fukuoka to the sword? We'll wait and see. All right, then. So, yeah, promises to be a fascinating round of matches, no question. Johnny, thank you ever so much for joining us again. It's always great to catch up with you. And, good luck to Gumba. And we look forward to, chatting again very soon, I hope.
Thanks very much, Ben. Obviously, I'd hoped to be on after a Gamba win, but it was better than the last time I was on after a Gamba lost 5-2 to Sanfrecce. So I guess I've moved up in the world a bit. So it's been fun talking to you guys. Thanks a lot for having me.
Brilliant stuff. And Sam, tremendous from you as well. You must be relieved to get the Yugo Tatsuta rant off your shoulders. And you can move on with the rest of your Monday afternoon. But another great chat, and look forward to catching up with you again next week.
Wait until he's called up to Moriyasu's Japan national team. There's a rant. glad to get that out of the system. I'm sure there'll be another one next week as he places Hiroshima and gets pressed into submission and it all goes horrendously wrong. But look forward to that and look forward to picking apart whatever Moriyasu puts together in his national team squad. I can't imagine we're going to agree with it to go based on previous selections.
Indeed. Yep, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, can you? All right, then. So that's it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. We'll thank Johnny again, even though he's part of the furniture. But we always like having him on the podcast, of course. Thanks to Brett for his question via our Patreon-only line group. And indeed, thanks to all of our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. And thanks to you, listeners, for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up J1 Match Day 5. Speak to you then. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast.